Welcome to Hot Lava Podcast, Kevin Acey. Oh my gosh, I'm actually back in San Diego. Jake Posner, Sports Editor of the Union Tribune. Jake, two for the Rockies, or two against the Rockies at Petco Park. Seems like it's been a long time. Then a day off. This is an interesting road trip. You got two against the Rockies, day off. Four against the Reds, day off. Two against the Mariners, then a travel day to Washington. So, Jake. Some interesting pitchers or pitching matchups here. I know I got Lucchesi and Mark Davich here for the Padres. Who's throwing for the Rockies?
Kevin, it looks like Antonio Sensatella, I hope I got that right, will be making his season debut tonight at Petco Park against Lucchesi for the Rockies. And then John Gray, who we're familiar with, 0-3 with a ERA just over 4, which actually by standards for Colorado pitchers really isn't terrible, but that's who the Padres will see tomorrow. The Rockies, we'll get to the Padres in a moment because they've obviously a big story with their road trip and everything that happened on it. The Rockies, though, have just been awful. 4-12 so far. They're actually winless in 5 games at home. They got finally 1-1 yesterday on a one-hitter, and Nolan Arenado hit his first home run of the season yesterday, which just I saw that on the ticker. It's just hard to believe that you just saw one next to his name. With the home run, and he has the highest batting average, and I know batting average doesn't mean anything, but still tells you a little bit, and in the box score from yesterday, coming out of the game yesterday, he has the highest batting average on the club at .254, so just a bunch of guys, you know, Blackman's like .234, I think Trevor Story's around .240, Ian Desmond's in the 100s, I mean, they've just got some guys that just aren't doing anything, so obviously the Padres will be hoping that that continues at least for two more days, but you are back home. You just spent what I'm sure felt like 3 more weeks on the road, but what do you take out of the road trip other than the obvious, which is that the Padres had themselves a great time and won, what, 7 out of 10?
7 out of 10, took all 3 series, did it by taking the first 2 in St. Louis, you know, had to win to hold on and win a tough one, the rubber match in San Francisco, and then you come in and you take the first 3 from Arizona, which actually, you know, that's a good hitting club. They had been playing well. I think they were 6-6 after, you know, not starting. What, they lost 3 of 4 in their opener, so they had actually been feeling good, and here you are. Look what the Cardinals did to the Dodgers after the Padres left. There's a lot within the context of it being 17 games. There's a lot to be super impressed by, and I could start with Fernando Tatis Jr. Jay.
That's a good place to start, Kevin. I mean, I think the great thing is he would have yesterday. What is it? Yesterday would have been his first game, or Saturday?
Friday would have been.
This weekend.
Debut,
I know.
His earliest, if they had decided to manipulate his service time, which everyone, including them, expected that they would, though they wouldn't have used the word manipulation. They would have used words like he needed to, you know, he needed some more seasoning.
Right.
He has seasoned this team with spectacular plays and big hits, and I think you basically could trace 3 victories don't happen without him, and you could say more based on defensive runs saved, runs created, energy created. It is truly amazing, and well, you had a great player, so it's Fernando Tatis Jr.'s credit to him, but credit to them because they're sort of rewriting the book here on, hey, let's do it. Let's just do it this way.
Right, and I think you mentioned creating energy, and I think it created a feeling, and I know you wrote about this, but I think it created a feeling in the clubhouse that, hey, we're serious about winning games. You know, that winning games this year matters more than, you know, almost anything else. I mean, I'm not going to say it matters more than health, because obviously when it comes to pitchers, we're going to see guys get taken out of games. I mean, we saw it the other night with Paddock. Guys are going to get taken out of games earlier than maybe they would have if you were, like, all out to win every game. But, I mean, they are obviously looking after the health of their players, which you would hope they would. But beyond that, showing that they want to win games and having guys like Paddock and Tatis especially on the roster at the start of the season, and it's paid off. I mean, this team would not have the record 11-6 that it has if those guys were not on the team. I just can't believe that, you know, their replacements would have been suitable in those spots and done what those guys have done. It's been part of why this team is fun to watch, and Tatis is a big part of that. Both defensively and offensively, showing the power. You know, look, he's going to have at-bats, as we've talked about, where he doesn't look very good. But almost everybody has at-bats like that. But
what's interesting?
He produces, you know, he's shown great power already, and he's made some great plays in the field with minimal poor plays.
You make 2 points there is like he's brought excitement to where even if it hadn't been for the big hits, right, or as many
right.
of them,
uh-huh.
but he's provided enough moments that everyone's expectations at the start were kind of low, both for him, at, you know, in terms of at the start of his career and at the start of this season for this team, you'd be like, okay, like if they were 500 or something right now or 8-9, but man, that Tatis exciting. Well, he's going to be great in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be something. Hit 5 home runs, and they've been big, almost every one of them, and then a big double the other night, and you know he's actually helping them win. That's like a whole other level. Then yesterday, he chases at least 2 pitches in his first at bat out of the zone, including strike 3 on a bounced slider from Zach Greinke. This is Zach Greinke who is dealing this year,
right?
Not like Zach Greinke, Kansas City Royals or Dodgers, right? But Zach Greinke nonetheless. Then first pitch of the second at bat, Fernando Tatis Jr. does not chase almost an identical, didn't bounce, but a very mm-hmm. similar slider for ball one. And what did he do on the second pitch? He hit a home run. He's done that actually quite frequently. Yes, he's had 2-3 strikeout games, including, I believe, Saturday when he had a home run, but he also, you know, struck out 3 times. But he's bouncing back from those like, you know, like good players do. Like I you know, hesitate to say, but like potentially great players do.
No, I think that's true. And this game is obviously physical talent plays a big part in it, but it's so much of a mental game. These guys fail so often that they can't, if you're weak mentally, it's just going to kill you. And I think in the sense of Tatis, yeah. he's shown that that's not the case. He'll have a bad at bat and he might have 3 bad at bats, but it doesn't seem to affect his next at bat. He comes back. And he shows something. He shows that he gets it, and he shows that he's strong, and be able to come over that. Look, I'm sure we're still going to see an 0-for-20 out of this guy, or a 1-for-18 or something like that, because you're going to see that from most people in this game. But he, at least at the beginning, he's shown signs that he knows how to handle that, and to be able to do that at his age is, you know, is remarkable, and it's a good sign for the future. And I had someone tweet me the other day that said that, you know, A.J. Preller should be in prison somewhere for being able to get Tatis for James Shields. And I said between that and Chris Paddock for Fernando Rodney, you know, those are Hall of Fame type moves. And not that Preller hasn't made bad moves and won't make bad moves in the future, but those are 2 Hall of Fame moves, and those can change your team for the future to get 2 guys like that without really giving up much or if of anything in return.
Yes, and what you do is you find teams in both of those situations. You had teams that thought, hey, we're going to get a piece here that could help us win this year. And, you know, go on for like a half an hour, an entire Hot Lava podcast today about the dangers in that, because
Corey Kluber,
yeah,
right?
For Fernando Rodney was fantastic that year. I don't think he'd blown a save, right?
Right. No, there was nothing wrong with him, but they didn't need him. They weren't going anywhere.
Had just before that, it was a single A, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Chris Paddock had just before that trade gone 5 games without allowing a hit.
Right.
Like he was going 4 or 5 innings at a time. It was something like 23 innings, right? But still at 23 innings without allowing a hit. This was like a steal. Like no one in the Marlins organization, except for like the owner, could fathom giving up this kid. But hey, they wanted to make a run right then.
Right.
So anyway, I always, when I see that, I process it through the context of, okay, so now the Padres in 2019, they need someone to eat innings. Okay, so what should they do about that? And, you know, like I said a couple weeks ago, I'll actually be surprised if they don't add something. And I won't be surprised if it's Dallas Keuchel. But I think it will be because Dallas Keuchel's price and demand for years came down. It came down to a reasonable price, and it came down to 1 year. And that's where I think they'll consummate a deal.
Right. Well, the clock's still ticking. I mean, we're at April 15 right now. The season, the season, I think, is 26 or 27 weeks long, and we've had 3 weeks already. And we've talked about it's going to take a couple, 3 weeks for him to get ready, even after he signs. So I would hope, if that's the move they're going to make, or whatever move they're going to make, but if it's someone who's not in the game right now, that it would be made, you know, sooner rather than later. So I'm sure that's something you'll keep an eye on this week. I do want to go back to more about the road trip, and especially the way that it ended yesterday. And the idea that the Diamondbacks were clearly upset on Saturday night. I think a guy got hit there, and there were some balls that were close. And it was obvious, obvious, at least to me watching the game, that Robert Stock was not intentionally throwing at anyone, because if he had, he would have missed him, because Robert Stock had no idea where the ball was going. It was like a certain quarterback who tried to throw a ball at me at a practice one day many years ago. And, of course, he missed, because he missed everything back then. But the idea that Stock was throwing at someone in that situation, or that the next hit batter or the hit batter came from Wingenter when they were trying to protect a lead, that he would be trying to throw at someone, just seems so ludicrous to me. And yet Arizona got all upset about it, at least their batters did. And then yesterday, And then yesterday, I missed the end of the game, but I did read later about what you said. But for anyone else who missed it, tell us what happened at the end of the game yesterday, when it was an Arizona victory was well in hand. And I had put on Twitter on Saturday night, I expected something to happen on Sunday that I wouldn't. I hoped I was wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona targeted somebody on Sunday. So it sounds like that's what they did.
Ludicrous is a very accurate word, because honestly, my head is down, as you know, at that point. I got to finish a story right when the game is done. And so it's the ninth inning, and in comes Greg Holland, is the reliever that the Diamondbacks bring in for the ninth inning. They've got a 4-run lead. They get the first two outs. Francisco Mejia is up. He's now gone 8 2/3 innings. It is completely out of my brain now that the Diamondbacks might do anything.
Right,
I mean,
that
never occurs to me, right? And Holland bounces, or not, he does. It ends up bouncing, but it bounces behind Francisco Mejia, who has to hop out of the way. First pitch. Second pitch, again, behind Mejia. The Padres dugout has gone nuts. They went a little nuts after the first one. They go totally nuts after the second one. Andy Green is yelling at is it Mike Winters?
Yeah.
The home plate umpire. Winters is like, what are you talking about? And, like, in his defense, to some extent, Jay, it's like 8 2/3 innings you wait, and then you can't even hit the guy?
Right.
I mean, it was crazy with it. It went down like that. But isn't that great about baseball? Is like, we all have like these unwritten rules, and then it seems like we can't follow them.
So what was the feeling in the clubhouse afterward about with not only Andy, but some of the players as well?
Well, they were ticked off, but it's like, and certainly Andy, who said, I love it. I don't know if he got this from his oldest daughter. It sounds like something that like an 11-year-old would say. Literally clueless. He said the umpires were literally clueless.
I love that. Right. Are we going to get a fine? Are we going to get a fine out of this? That would be the thing where in the NBA they'd send out a release today that someone had been fined $15,000 for criticizing the officiating or something. And then the guy making $20 million a year would say, yeah, whatever. Here's your money.
I think that what will happen is Andy will probably pay $1,100. It's like something very small. It's kind of funny. And then they'll decide what charity it goes to. Andy's always like, I wish I could decide what charities go to. I get thrown out more often. But yes, there will most certainly be a fine. I don't know. Jay, the umpires, I know you're not a huge fan of them. Should he have thrown out Holland like right away?
I don't know. You know, that's one of those things. I don't know what I'd have to look at what the rule actually says, or if there is a rule for something like that, for intentionally throwing at someone. I mean, he didn't.
For missing someone?
Yeah, I don't know that you throw somebody out in that case. I mean, for one thing, he didn't hit him.
No.
So I don't think you can. I certainly don't think he could throw him out.
Warning.
But it seems like he should have gotten a warning. To at least acknowledge that they knew what was going on. It's going to be really interesting. I was just looking this up to see, obviously, when's the next time these teams play.
May 20th.
And it's right, May 20th, back here at Petco. It'll be really interesting to see what happens before that game, if there are any, if anything comes up before the game, if there are any warnings issued before the game, or if the umpires are quick to issue a warning the first time a pitch goes inside or anything. But you would hope they would keep a better eye on it than Mike Winters apparently did yesterday to not do anything. But I did love that quote about literally clueless umpiring. To me, that's a common affliction that most umpires have. But I mean, some of the strike zones and you know, the games and it's like pitches that are clearly strikes get, I mean, and Arizona complained a lot, and the Padres, I think, did too, but because some of the strike zones over the weekend were just awful. But
it's like was awful.
These pitches that are right on the inside corner, and I can't understand how an umpire could miss a pitch on the inside corner. He's standing right there. He lines up on the inside corner. These guys miss pitches on the inside corner. One of the umps, I think it was Saturday night, was giving pitches like 3 or 4 inches off the plate on the inside
all
corner.
Night.
And then pitches that were on the outside corner that were strikes were not being called strikes. It's just crazy that these guys can't. And they were talking on the broadcast, I think, about how umpires are better now than they've ever been. And it's like, I don't know, maybe that's the case, and we just know it now because, you know, we see the box on the screen and all that stuff. But seeing some of these games called, I just can't believe that people in front offices and dugouts aren't all over Major League Baseball to do something and get something fixed and either get these guys to call strikes right or get the electronic strike zone working where we can use it or whatever it might be. But there's got to be a better solution to this than to be missing all these pitches. And at the same time, I'll say batters seem highly sensitive about any
good
pitch that
yes.
is borderline. They all think it's a ball. And
which one is like the dog and the tail or the,
right,
you know, the egg
right.
And the chicken, because, you know, our batters just, but it is ridiculous because honestly, a lot of times the batters complain it was a strike.
Absolutely. And it's like swing, you know, look, that was a great pitch. It doesn't mean it was a bad call or just swing the bat.
Before, at least me, Jay, I don't mm-hmm. know how long your disdain for umpires goes back, but before the little box, right, or the fact that I'm charting pitches the next day
right.
and I get to see, you know, on MLB.com, I get to see the little thing, right, it was like, that's exactly what you would say to a batter. Hey, buddy, he's calling it there all day. Swing at it.
Right.
And Greg Maddux would be laughing. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one of those guys that thinks that, well, it's, you know, if he consistently calls it 4 inches off the plate, that it's okay, because it's not okay. But
how about the corner? How about that, you know?
If it's on the corner, it's a strike, you know, and these guys too often, I think Nick Ahmed was one the other night that the pitch that he struck out on was a perfect pitch. I mean, there was like the entire ball was in the strike zone. It wasn't even like it had just clipped it or anything like that. So anyway, that's enough on.
That was our umpire segment, but anybody
that's enough on umpires.
Baseball, Jay, I feel like we have to apologize for our umpire segments, but anybody that watches it every night, it is becoming like increasingly frustrating.
Yeah.
Both ways. It's not about the positive. This is about like, dang it, man, get it right.
Right. Right. No, I agree. And it's even more frustrating, I think, because of replay, where we do get some calls right now, you know, we're able to get tag plays and so many tag plays have been missed through the years. And I always wonder about, you know, all sports, but especially football and baseball that use replay like this, like how the history would be different, you know, if we had replay for certain calls and everything. But anyway, we did say we would move on from that. What else did we like about the Padres? And then we'll get to what we didn't like and the concern, which is obviously middle relief. But what else did you like about what you saw on the road trip?
Well, for now, what I like is that this team makes adjustments. They really do. You go through their at-bats early in games, and I'm going to continue to kind of like, you know, unlayer this and try to put together an informative story on it. But it really is kind of it really is impressive that consistently, virtually every game, bad at-bats turn into good at-bats. And you know what? You can have good at-bats, and it doesn't really show in a hit, but eventually it does. And that's what's happening for the Padres, like, almost every night. Mm-hmm. You know, including they put together some runs and a little comeback yesterday. And, you know, a lot of times it's been they're winning. That would be probably number one, because that has to happen, like, all the time. Then, hey, Matt Strom bounces back. Gotta like that. Chris Paddock has yet to have, like, his worst outing. He didn't give up an unearned run. You know?
Unearned run,
not
right.
Good.
Yeah, no, I know.
He didn't give up an earned run.
Right.
He gave up an unearned run. So, and Nick Margavich, I've been writing about him tonight. He pitches tomorrow against the Rockies. As we tape this on Monday, he pitches Tuesday. He's just keeping guys off balance, and that's as simple as it gets. He puts his pitches exactly where he wants to, and major league hitters don't know what's coming because he actually does have four really good pitches. He doesn't have a single great one, but he has four really good ones.
Right, right. One concern, obviously, is the bullpen, and the other concern, and, you know, look, it's early, but it's 3 weeks. I don't think this is sustainable, but the Padres actually after yesterday have a negative run differential. You know, even with their 11-6 record. And it's weird. They have the best record in the National League right now. They're one of three first place teams. Two of the first place teams have negative run differentials. So I'm not sure we can read too much into it. Milwaukee, who everyone agrees is a good team, is -6. The Padres are -3. But I do think that's something to keep an eye on. I don't know that, you know, winning one run games for 6 months is probably not sustainable. And it's probably not sustainable from a bullpen standpoint, which brings us to the bullpen. You know, Stammen and Yates have been tremendous, but, and I guess Wingenter's been pretty good as well, but there's been a lot of issues in the middle, and they made a couple moves yesterday hoping that, you know, to fix that. And then Matt Whistler went out and, you know, gave up, didn't have a good inning, I think Maton gave up a home run. So they're still searching for answers, basically, in that middle relief spot, right?
It's one of those things where they are correctly, they are with, you know, telling the truth when they talk about all this depth they have and guys at AAA and all that. That is true. That's great. You have some good arms. You can bring up Gerardo Reyes who gets a win for, you know, good timing. He got two outs and, you know, and good timing. He gets a win in his major league debut on Friday, but then he gets roughed up the next day.
Right.
But, and they have, you know, these guys they can bring up. No. You would much rather have 8, 9, 10 guys that you could count on. You would much rather have Robert Stock of 2018. That is what you have, like to have, and you don't. And Robert Stock, especially when Aaron Loop goes down, especially when Jose Castillo goes down, Robert Stock was a huge part of the plan this year. And the plan being they have a limited rotation, as in limited experience and limited innings for a couple of the guys. They needed their middle relief to, yes, you need Yates and Stammen to be what they've been, but you need your middle relief to be really good, and it has not been really good. Now, good news, Adam Warren appears to be Adam Warren, whereas early on it was like, huh, what's happening here? Well,
right,
he came in late to spring training, and maybe it just took him an extra couple weeks. Who knows? But he was excellent in Arizona. So, but that is the biggest thing to keep an eye on. And going into Arizona was like, are they going to get a starting pitcher? Then I'm like, no, you know what? I'm pretty convinced, talking to people and what I'm seeing, I'm pretty convinced that they're going to try to rotate this bullpen, right? No, I'm back now to thinking, no, they need an innings eater because you just can't keep doing this to your bullpen.
Right, right. Well, and especially because they need guys, and that's why Stock was so important. They need guys that can go a couple innings at a time, and it seemed like Stock was that guy.
Yep.
That, and he enjoyed the role. I mean, he talked about it, but for whatever reason, he doesn't have his command right now. So, you know, you just have to hope that he finds it down in El Paso, and I'm sure that he's going to get another chance up here, you know, and they're just going to have to just keep rotating until they until they find somebody that can.
Well, they'll have 20 relievers this year.
Right,
yeah.
Right, and you're just going to have to see who's reliable, and when they are, you use them, and when they show that they're not, then you know, put them on the Quackenbush shuttle back to El Paso and bring up somebody else.
Everybody knows when they go down, they're coming back, and when they come up, if your name's not Stammen, Wingenter, or Yates, you're probably going back down.
Yeah. Right, right.
Or Warren, I should say, Adam Warren. It's not on purpose because I think that he might be a gigantic part of this bullpen,
yeah,
but I just keep forgetting him.
No, I agree, and I actually thought that Erlen was pretty safe too, and then that shows what I know. So,
you know, though, I understand what you're saying because I do believe that was absolutely circumstantial. I mean, he was going to be the last guy to be optioned, but the fact is, it's not personal because all those guys, all the optionable guys are going, you know, are always going to have a chance of spending 10 days down in the minors.
Right, right. So, all right, Kevin, I'll see you at the ballpark tonight.
That'll be great. Two against the Rockies, and then an off day, first one in 14 days, I believe. So we'll talk to you.
And then we'll talk to everybody again on Thursday. Thanks, everyone.